Watch. Tennessee Republicans laugh about stripping majority black Memphis of power as Warner walks in wearing a Trump flag cape. Jesus Christ. Todd Warner is a Tennessee representative, for those that didn't know. Although I know all of you know that, of course.
House or Senate?
Representative. Senate.
Oh, Senate, sorry.
Yeah. Chaos erupts after Tennessee Republicans pass gerrymandered map to eliminate the state's only majority black congressional district. The new map will likely give Republicans control of all the state's U.S. House seats. Okay.
Gonna get pretty crazy out there soon.
Are these gerrymanders happening in response to the Supreme Court decision? Is that why they're able to do this now? Or
yes,
this was the day after. Okay. Yep, it was a trigger bill. Gotcha. Mike Lee, this is a real guy, right? This is a real U.S. Representative, right?
I'll look him up.
I see this guy tweet so much fucking insane shit. I have to keep
U.S. Senator
remembering that he's a real, he's crazy. This guy is actually fucking insane.
Senator from Utah.
He's fucking crazy. He just tweets the craziest shit. State Representative Justin Jones burns a paper Confederate flag in protest of Tennessee's redistricting efforts. It's an insurrection only when Republicans do it. It's partisan gerrymandering only when Republicans do it. It's norm-shattering only when Republicans do it. Please like and share if you're tired of the double standard. 43,000 likes, 14,000 retweets. His fucking Twitter name is Based Mike Lee. Oh my fucking God.
I'll walk him out. Y'all going?
This is Tennessee State Representative John Ray Clemens. Cuts through Republican or Representative Jason Zachary's Republican claim that the GOP's new gerrymandered map was drawn solely on a partisan basis since it relies on census data that does not include partisan statistics.
Yesterday, Speaker Sexton was asked about who drafted this bill and how this came about. He pointed to the Senate sponsors, Senator Stevens, Senator Johnson. Yesterday, Senator Stevens was asked the question, what numbers were relied upon to draw these maps? And his answer was pretty conclusive that it was census data. So
census data, he might explain this, but census data is bad because that means that they're not drawing maps for partisan reasons, which you're allowed to do legally, but they're drawing maps explicitly on racial boundaries, which would be kind of weird.
And section one here refers to all census descriptions, so forth. So is that correct that the census data was the sole basis for drawing these lines from 2020?
Speaker Zachary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, it's my understanding the census was used to draft the map you have in front of you.
Chairman Clement.
Based on the population.
Okay, well, that's pretty interesting because census data doesn't include any partisan scores or partisan data. And your entire argument this entire week has been that this is about politics and partisanship. So if you solely relied on census data, I'm confused about how you knew partisan scores when drawing this map, if that wasn't even considered.
Speaker Zachary.
Thank you. Did you have a question?
Chairman Clemens.
If that's your answer, that is fine by me, and that is all I need.
Okay. Census data. I understand it tells you how many people are there, race, kids, etc., right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would this be a bad thing to use for drawing maps?
What if I told you that I was going to draw a new gerrymander, mm-hmm. and I'm doing it on political consideration?
Okay.
Based on how people vote.
Sure. I would say that that is probably... I would say that that's a bad thing.
Well, it's legal, though.
Yeah, I understand it's legal.
Yep. But if I tell you I use the census data to draw it, the census data doesn't have anything about how people vote.
Okay. Now I'm getting it.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I see.
Not good.
Their conclusion just can't be followed.
Yeah, it was racially drawn. They're trying anything. To draw yeah. out like a race, basically, on the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone in chat said, well, Tennessee is just the first. Louisiana and a bunch more states are already lining up to get their maps passed ASAP. There's a very realistic chance that this is a 10-plus seat swing in the Republicans' favor. After all this is said and done, possibly.
Are you aware that Memphis is predominantly African American?
I am not.
So to my sponsor, who went to law school at the University of Memphis and lived there for 3 years, you're telling me you're not aware that Memphis is predominantly African American, am I?
I didn't have any black friends there.
Correct.
Senator Lamar, he's answered that.
Is the sponsor aware that Shelby County is predominantly African American?
I'm not aware.
Are you aware that Tennessee's 9th congressional district is the only majority African American congressional district in this state?
No, I have no knowledge of that.
Memphis is a majority black city. With 0.9 to 65% of the population.
Problem, troll face?
I had no idea that.
I feel like I've been in a Klan meeting for 3 days. I mean, it feels like that a lot of times on the House floor in Tennessee. But this was so blatant. It is utterly...
Wait. They split up Memphis into three different pieces, effectively taking away all their seats. Hold on. Can you link me like a before and after for that map? I'm just curious what that looks like.
Ridiculous.
How are they allowed to do that?
What do you mean?
Well, I would think that, like, if you're going to do districts, it would be, like, city-inclusive.
No, you can do it however you want. You don't have to do it on any of those grounds. Know. The issue is that, and again, we'll go back to reading this broadly after this, mm-hmm. is that the Voting Rights Act, I think, was kind of supposed to prevent this. But Alito, from the 37 pages we've read so far, seems like Alito has basically said, as long as somebody doesn't say, I hate black people, while they're drawing their maps, then they're completely and totally scot-free, basically. Yeah, as long as you're not... literally screaming from the rooftops that you're trying to racially gerrymander, there's no way that anybody can touch any of the maps.
That's because the totality of the circumstances
is gone. Yes.
Kind of removed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it's literally like, well, did they say it? Yes or no? Like,
basically, yes. Yeah. Which is why that guy before was asking about, like, so how did you draw these maps using only census data? So, like, in the past, I believe when the Supreme Court shot down North Carolina trying to do a gerrymander, my guess is it would have been done. I didn't actually read the case. I just read articles about it because I wasn't reading the case back then. But they shot it down, I'm pretty sure, because the term they used was surgically targeted black people. And part of the reason was because North Carolina was literally requesting census data and doing it on racial boundaries. They were shutting down certain polling places, disallowing certain types of ID, changing like early voting restrictions, all things that were cutting against black people voting.
And yeah, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, it was incredibly obvious. Obvious enough to make it to shoot it down. But now that same analysis, my guess is that analysis would fail now because they would say, well, unless they are actually not saying it.
Do you think that this should have been legislated then?
It is utterly ridiculous.
I can't pause it. Sorry. Legislated? It was. It was called the Voting Rights Act.
Sorry. What I meant is should we start putting things and codifying it into like amendments and shit? I understand that the barrier for that is really fucking hard.
The problem is
it seems like we're getting activist judges often now.
So one of the things that I kept arguing, but the problem is you just have to go so deep to understand this. One of the things I kept arguing before was that a lot with Hutch is that if you've decided you want to do something, the legal argument is trivial. Yeah, you can do whatever you want. These people are fairly clever. Like in the Alito ruling, like the idea that the Voting Rights Act has stood for 40, however, or 50, whatever fucking years, and nobody has, we've always assumed this one thing about it, but nobody's actually analyzed this thing about it. So we're going to completely turn this entire fucking law around on its head to completely reverse how it's ever been understood. If you're going to start getting into interpretations of law like that, I mean, you can basically just change and do whatever the fuck you want. It doesn't really matter. You can just do whatever. So I don't know what law you could pass to save yourself from people like Alito and Thomas.
Yeah.
Times on the House floor in Tennessee. But this was so blatant. It is utterly ridiculous. And when you see, I stood up and I talked about how the map was racist. And I said it was a white power rally and all of these things. And then when one of my colleagues, a young black man, Rep. Justin Jones, used the same language I use, he was called out.
So I think Memphis is down here. Is the city is down here.
Instead of being two, it's three now.
No. Well, it was like majority, it seems one. And now they've cut it into three. It's kind of cut up on stream. Into three different.
I see what you're doing.
Where they've like taken away absolutely based.
Isn't it that in these districts, when they do this type of thing, that they can gerrymander and they can give themselves an edge, but they also do make themselves weaker in moments of like extreme turnout? Right. Like if you
theoretically,
were to,
yes. Yep.
Yeah. Right. So it's not all bad. Like they're doing this, but they're also giving up some strongholds in exchange for trying to get more territory. So it can go against them as well.
Theoretically.
Can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Except in Massachusetts.
Is Nashville like in the center? Is it around here or?
Yeah. It's like center, like top center.
Gotcha.
How are state legislatures done? Is it? It's not like a popular vote where everybody in the fucking state, it's like done by, I would assume.
You mean how are like state congressmen or whatever chosen?
Yeah.
I have no fucking idea. In my very per state, I don't know.
Because it seems pretty retarded that like you could live in Memphis and you get like one congressman, right? But then all of these retarded like fucking Republican districts all get like 10 because they're just more land.
I don't know. Depends on how the states are.
Time to speak. And they were objecting to him saying the things, you know. How do you demonstrate how racist that House floor is by letting the white woman say what she wants to say, but when a black man does that, you object and cut his time?
Well, you know, the lawmakers that are responding to you tonight, they insist that this has nothing to do with race. They insist it was purely political. Listen.
The maps were drawn to maximize the potential Republican partisan advantage by winning and having a chance and opportunity to win all 9 congressional districts for the Republican Party.
What's your response? This is about red and blue, not black and white.
Bless their hearts. They are such liars. They know what they are doing. They absolutely know. As a matter of fact, one of the things that was said today on the House floor, which was very interesting and very telling, they said that they used census data to draw the maps, and then they claimed it was partisan. There's no partisanship in census data. They said the only data they used was census data. And then they said that it was based on partisanship, but there is no partisanship data with census data. So they're not the sharpest knives in the drawer. They're vicious, they're evil, and they're racist. But they're also cowards. They know that they can't win this next election on their ideas. And so they're going to have to cheat to get more seats. And that's what this was.
You think Hutch is sweating right now?
I don't know. The Republican Party to black voters as they silence their voice in Congress. Wow. No vote in Tennessee, plus one GOP. No vote in Florida, plus four. Missouri, plus one. North Carolina, plus two. Texas, plus five. And then Virginia's maps were thrown out. Is this all the gerrymander gains that have been solidified so far? Or are these ones like coming down the pipeline as well? Like, did Florida finish their gerrymander? Or
seems like these are finished now.
So how many did we get again?
Well,
I know we got California.
We got five in California. It's not good, Steven.
Ah,
what do you want me to say?
He didn't even include Mississippi and Louisiana.
Are those done? I would assume he didn't include it because they're not done.
Maybe. I don't know. Wait, what is? I don't understand what I'm looking at here. There's no way these are districts, are they? Or what? Oh, he's just saying theoretically they could do it this way?
I mean, yeah, we're in endgame gerrymandering.
We're in the endgame now, guys.
We gotta go back to the past.
Confederate states are rushing through rigged maps to erase black districts off the map. If this doesn't make you angry, it should. Also, there was a, the norm was that you did your redistricting or your gerrymandering, whatever bullshit, that you did it every 10 years on the census data, right? This is a little bit out of the norm that states are rushing to do them. Okay. And then when Texas did their redistricting, was that because they were assuming ahead of time how the Supreme Court would rule? I'm trying to remember what the Pam Bondi memo was that told Texas they could redistrict. What was that letter from the DOJ?
Is it this one?
It might be this one from July 7th. Federal Reserve Service formal notice by the Department of Justice to the state of Texas of serious concerns regarding the legality of four of Texas's congressional districts. As stated below, these districts currently constitute unconstitutional coalition districts, and we urge the state of Texas to rectify these race-based considerations from these specific districts. What was the big motivation for the DOJ to send this letter? Did they know ahead of time, or did they have a signal ahead of time from Alito or from Roberts that they would be kicking out the Section 2, basically, of the Voting Rights Act? Or because I think this was the thing that kind of kicked off our whole bullshit with the gerrymandering stuff. I'm old enough to remember when Republicans in Ohio just ignored court rulings repeatedly and did it anyway. Apparently, Louisiana just started yesterday and had hundreds of people come testify. We have four different maps. One maintains the 4-2 split. We are 50-50 Dem Republican and 1/3 black citizens. Two are 5-1 and one is 6-0. The feed for this particular video was cut and multiple verbal fights happened yesterday. We had elderly people testify that had been in the bus boycott and civil rights marches. We have had only four black congressmen since slavery. All four were here to testify. Our governor declared an emergency to redraw maps after ballots had already been received by the Secretary of State. So there's a slight chance the court rules it was too late to change it per our Constitution. Jesus.
So at what point are Dem leaders going to lead protests over this? Any walks planned? Anything? Or are we just...
Well, I don't know what the point... Well, I don't know what you're supposed to do. We've done our No Kings...
I mean, the Tennessee one seems easy.
Sure, but I mean, like, we've done the No Kings stuff. These are, like, the largest protests in U.S. history. But then, like, what are we getting?
Well, okay, well, then, if not to protest, what is your solution, then?
Don't worry about it. I don't know. I mean, you need clear, actionable things from the Democrats. Like, what are some asks that we're actually trying to get to make things better? The thing is that Republicans have so much behind them in terms of, like, what is our legislative strategy to, you know, do the things that we want across the United States. And Democrats just don't really have that behind the scenes. And then we can't communicate any of it to the voters because the Democrats can't message on anything because of their lack of media presence. So you've got the far left that's just screeching about everything being the same. You've got the Democrats screeching about the Republicans screeching about whatever the fuck they want while they're getting all of their changes passed because the American citizens gave them the power to basically everything. And then you're just like, fucked. The Minnesota protests work. Dems in red states should absolutely protest the gerrymandering. Well, the Minnesota protests work because that was a simple thing and a simple ask, right? You have ICE citizens killing, or you have ICE officers killing U.S. citizens and they want them to fucking leave, right?
I mean, I think the Memphis one could be pretty simple.
For the crazy gerrymandering?
Yeah, we don't want Memphis split up into three districts. Like, that is a simple ask. I think Dems need to get together and start figuring out what are simple asks and simple wins that we can start getting. And then
to fight against the gerrymander. Yeah, I mean, that's to undo
Memphis
it, maybe.
Memphis shouldn't be split up into three. Like, that is a simple ask. That is something you can protest on. I'm surprised that cities can be split up in a gerrymander. That seems kind of retarded to me. Why not? Well, usually when you're drawing maps, I would assume you're trying to do it because you want to incorporate, like, different... like you want to incorporate like the same type of people within like the same map so they get like similar representation, etc. And splitting up a city feels semi-retarded. Do I want a huge city to be one district? Yes. You don't want 3 million people in a city to have one rep. You need to split it up. Yeah, I guess that does make sense, huh?
So much for being here. I can only hope that one day I have as impressive an intro as you guys both just had. And thank you so much to the audience and to everyone watching online. Really, this debate will function is we will begin by doing a moderated Q&A where I will ask a question directed at one of you. We will alternate who begins every question, and you will each have opportunity to give a 2-minute response, and then whoever started will have time for a 1-minute rebuttal. And then after the moderated Q&A, we will switch over to audience questions. So start getting them ready. So to start off, before specific issues, I would like to start with foundational questions. What in practical terms do you believe it means for a president to uphold or deviate from the Constitution? And does this differ from upholding constitutional norms? If so, how? We'll start with you, Mehdi, and you can each give a two-minute response and a one-minute rebuttal.
Wow.
So thank you for having me. Great to be here. I'm actually disappointed with that vote of 78-22, because you know what they say, the only way for me is down.
Oh, I'm guessing, I hate it when they do this, is when they do, to see who won the debate, how many people were persuaded. Because, yeah, if you start off where it's like 80-20, like 80% of the audience sides with me, 20% sides with the other guy, if he convinces like a few people, he's probably going to win. And he's got 80 people to convince. I've only got 20. They're probably more hardcore dug in if it's like the odds are that skewed. Like, ugh.
Good luck to me. I would say constitutional norms, very vague. I'm not sure actually what that means, apart from a historical precedent, what other people have done. And I think tonight, I'm guessing, and Michael can tell me I'm wrong, that a lot of Michael's argument will be, well, other presidents did this, a lot of whataboutism, a lot of see what X did, see what Y did, see what Obama did, see what Biden did. And I think we have to be very clear here. We're talking about Donald Trump tonight. Donald Trump is sui generis. There's never been a president like him before, certainly not in our lifetimes. He's undeniable.
Give your answer before hearing them. What was the question to this? Is what do we think of when we think of a president adhering to constitutional norms? I mean, I guess it really depends. I would say there's like a spirit of how the government works. And the idea is that you are in good faith trying to work with the system to bring whatever changes you want to see about understanding that sometimes you lose. And when you lose, it's okay. And you try to win. I don't know. It's very broad. I guess it would depend. I would have to prepare a particular answer for this debate, though. I'd have to sit down and write one out, which I did when I was debating Lila.
Violating both constitutional norms, i.e. precedents, but also the Constitution, the amendments, the articles of the Constitution in this country. He's doing it all the time. At this point, at this stage, anyone who tells you Donald Trump is not violating the Constitution is gaslighting you and or a member of his cult. Right? The facts are very clear. True. We can go through them in order. True. I mean, right now, if you look at the Constitution, Donald Trump, it's violating the Appropriations Clause, the Emoluments Clause, the Elections Clause, the Taxing and Spending Clause, the Take Care Clause, the Declare War Clause. He's also violating the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment, the 14th Amendment, maybe soon the 22nd Amendment. And, you know, yes, other presidents, to go back to your question, have violated norms. Other presidents have certainly violated clauses of the Constitution. But no president, certainly not in modern American history, has launched a multi-pronged, cross-the-board, open assault on, forget norms, on the amendments and articles of our Constitution in the space of less than 18 months, right? Yes, previous presidents have violated perhaps a single constitutional amendment, sure, and been called out for it. None of them said they plan to terminate the Constitution, as Donald Trump once did. None of them said, I don't know. When they were asked, as Trump was on Meet the Press last year, is it the job of the president to uphold the Constitution? I don't know, he said. None of them declared themselves to be a king or a dictator, even for a day. None of them were rebuked by their own vice president for trying to violate the Constitution and the rule of law. What did Mike Pence say? I know Michael's a big fan of Mike Pence. So I came specially with a Mike Pence quote. Mike Pence said, President Trump demanded, I choose between him and our Constitution. If you are pressuring your own vice president to put you above your Constitution, you're not just violating norms, you're violating the Constitution, you're violating your oath of office. And it is very clear tonight, Donald Trump is a clear and present danger to the Constitution. Forget norms. Let's raise the bar. To the Constitution, to the articles and amendments of the Constitution, to our rights and liberties, to our democracy. And you don't have to take my word for that tonight. Just take Mike Pence's.
The Mike Pence standard of constitutional jurisprudence. Okay, wonderful to be here. Thank you all for having me. You know, my father is a Dartmouth graduate, so I hope I don't do the family too much shame this evening. But I don't think I...
The what?
His tie looks retarded.
Too Why? Big. Really?
I think it's like the new Trump fucking thing where everybody has like the huge fucking middle area of the tie.
Mm-hmm.
It's stupid.
Okay.
Will, because we have to Mehdi's points, have to narrow in on what exactly we're discussing. What does it mean to uphold the Constitution? And I certainly hope that my opponent here does not mean some kind of pedantic literalism that merely looks at the text of the Constitution, though we should certainly do that as well. But to uphold the Constitution, it would seem to me, entail upholding what the Constitution has meant, how the Constitution has obtained, how it has in fact governed our country from the beginning through the present. And so I think my opponent here is trying to break me away from citing historical precedent and how other presidents have upheld the Constitution. And I think that's for very good reason. If I were in your shoes, I would do the very same. Because when you look at how the Constitution has in fact been put into effect in the United States, no reasonable person could even suggest that Trump is upholding it. You know, if we were to use this very limited pedantic literalist Constitution, then we would have to disqualify virtually every single president we've ever had from upholding the Constitution. All the modern presidents who have surveilled en masse, all of the great presidents who have violated habeas corpus, who have interned people, two great presidents and two great parties, the Republican Abraham Lincoln and the Democrat Franklin Roosevelt. But going back even further, we would have to disqualify Jefferson for the Louisiana Purchase. We would actually have to disqualify President Washington, because President Washington declared neutrality in the French Revolutionary Wars, and he was accused of violating the Constitution by no less a man than James Madison, the father of the Constitution. But Madison gets his comeuppance because Madison would be accused of failing to uphold the Constitution when he annexed West Florida. So I think when we take a look at what the Constitution has meant, how it has been interpreted by the three co-equal government, adjudicated by the Supreme Court, laws enacted by the Congress, and then, of course, the executive power and the president, we will find that the Constitution prevails. The warnings of the histrionic critics of President Trump, who have been promising us that he's on the brink of shredding the Constitution for about 10 years now, any day now, it's coming, I think we will find that President Trump is indeed the president and the Constitution, nevertheless, and I think very much for that reason, prevails.
Would you like to respond?
I'd love to respond.
All right, you have 1 minute.
The best thing about social media is you can see what's going on in the world. And today I looked at Michael Knowles' tweet advertising this event. And underneath the tweet, Tim Pool, another podcaster some of you may know, posted what looked like a Grok-generated list of previous presidents who had violated the Constitution. So I was able to prep myself for the debate, knowing that Michael would have all of those examples,
Uh-oh.
Which he did.
Uh-oh.
Thomas Jefferson, Louisiana Purchase, ratified by Congress. Abraham Lincoln and FDR, Civil War and World War II. I don't see either of those things happening right now. We can go through the list. I've already conceded that previous presidents have done unconstitutional things, but Donald Trump has done it in a way that no other president has, in a time frame no other president has, without the excuses that other presidents could at least point to. World War II and the Civil War. You think that's what's happening in America right now when he goes after migrants and Home Depot parking lots? No, that is not what's happening right now. And let's just be very clear. Michael says no one could dispute that he's upholding the Constitution. He says histrionics. Do you know who Terry Doughty and Nancy Brazel and Amy St. Eve and Trevor McFadden?
Do you think you can win an Israel-Palestine debate against Mehdi in top form? I would win an Israel-Palestine debate against any pro-Palestinian in the world, 100%.
And we go through the list. Daniel Rodriguez, Fernando Rodriguez Jr., Adam Albright, Eric Committee, Carl Dudek, Justin Lang. We can go through the list. Do you know who these people are? They are Trump-appointed judges who have ruled against Donald Trump since last January in key constitutional cases. First Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, 14th Amendment. They've all said, Donald Trump, what he's doing is violating the Constitution. These people are not liberals or Marxists, as Stephen Miller says. They're not doing histrionics, as Michael says. They are looking at the Constitution. And even as MAGA judges, they're saying, you've gone too far. You have violated these amendments of the Constitution. It's Trump judges saying this, not me. It's Mike Pence saying this, not me. Michael can make these arguments about liberal histrionics. The problem is now...
Is your position closer to Mehdi Hasan or Mark Levin? Is Mark Levin the crazy... Is he a conservative talk show host? Is he the British guy that used to fill in for Rush? I'm making that up, right? I feel like we've watched Mark Levin before. I don't know. That guy's fucking crazy. But Mehdi Hasan is a little bit crazy on Israel too. But Mark Levin is insanely crazy. I don't know. I have no idea.
Now is that people with eyes and ears who are not MAGA partisans see what is happening here.
Even better audio. We're at 27:20. Oh fuck, it's not centering in the same spot. Oh.
right now when he goes after migrants and Home Depot parking lot. And they are looking at the Constitution. And even as MAGA judges, they're saying, you try these arguments about liberal histrionics. The problem is now is that people with eyes and ears who are not MAGA partisans see what is happening here. Donald Trump is doing things at present not done before, including ignoring a 9-0 Supreme Court ruling.
Okay. Let's try our hardest. The next question is really adhere to tire regulations.
I will.
But it's right there.
Oh, are you going to strike?
I saw it and defied it. You at least didn't see.
Wait, it's not that bad, I guess. But like, did somebody take the cleaned up audio and use like some kind of AI or whatever to like fill what was missing? I think that's what happened, right? That's what I feel like I'm hearing.
Let's try our hardest. The next question is really adhere to tire regulations.
I will.
But it's right there.
Oh, are you going to strike?
I saw it and defied
it. Like, that sounded like a bad, like a Chinese, like a kung fu movie dub.
Regulations.
I will. But it's right there.
Right here.
Oh, are you going to strike?
God damn it. Just let me watch the other one. The other one was fine enough.
It's over.
Deportation on this.
Yes, to hearing and legal representation.
Supreme Court ruling.
Okay. Let's try our hardest. The next question is really adhere to time regulations.
Well, it's right there.
Oh, are you going to see the clock?
I saw it and defied it. You already said so.
Thank you so much for those thoughts. That was really interesting. Maddie, I know you mentioned you talked about ICE immigration, and actually in 2025, the Department of Homeland Security reported record-breaking immigration and enforcement actions with over 600,000 deportations. Given this information, should undocumented immigrants have a right to due process under the Constitution? And if so, can deportations at the rate completed in 2025 be carried out without compromising access to hearings and legal representation?
Sure. Yes. In most cases, the foreigners who are being deported are entitled to due process of the law. This is not the case necessarily when it comes to revocation of visas, which are not some natural or constitutional right. But in the case of the people who are being deported, they are entitled to due process, and they are receiving process, actually, from President Trump. But not all due process is created equal, and the Immigration and Nationality Act is endured for some 60 years and in other forms for longer, recognizes that there is a role for expedited deportations. And it's not only President Trump who's insisted upon this, but it's all of his recent predecessors, going back to Bill Clinton and George Bush and Barack Obama, who he contradicts himself sometimes. The Democrats, when they want to appeal to the people who voted for the mass deportations, and in the vote, they pretend that Barack Obama deported lots and lots of people, as many as Trump. But then when they want to say the deportations were unconstitutional, he really barely deported anybody. But Joe Biden did the same thing, and Trump as well. My opponent says that no one has acted as quickly in these egregious displays as President Trump. That, of course, is facially absurd, because President Trump is only the second president in American history to win a non-consecutive second term. So he's just had longer than any other president other than FDR, who certainly did upset constitutional norms. But regardless.
Well, I think he said in the last year and a half, didn't he? Did I misunderstand that?
They do have due process. He is following that. And the mass deportations really could be much larger. Let's not forget the great Democrat President Truman, who deported near 750,000 foreigners, Mexicans. He did so with scanty due process of the law. That was in 52. Following President Eisenhower in 1954, deported 1.1 million in Operation Wetback. There was not even really the suggestion that either of those men had violated the law by deporting foreigners who don't really have any right to be here. So President Trump is very much within the mainstream of the Constitution in his deportations. And frankly, I wish you were more.
So just to respond very quickly on the main point about deporting foreigners, you said at the end, who have no right to be here. Notice the phrasing. Deporting foreigners have no right to be here. How do we know they have no right to be here?
You need due process.
Unless they have due process. That's the whole point. When you end up deporting American citizens, do you know they deported American citizens? Terry Doughty is a Trump judge who last year ruled that a 2-year-old American child who was deported with her mother against her father's wishes, who was in the U.S., he said, the administration just deported an American citizen without any meaningful process. That was a Trump judge's verdict when he heard what ICE had done. Right. In Minnesota, another Trump judge, her name is Nancy Brazel, appointed by Donald Trump. She said the government asserts the right to arrest thousands of people, put them in an overcrowded warehouse, and then deny them their right to due process. That's Nancy Brazel ruling against this administration on Fifth Amendment grounds. Again, Trump judges. Michael seems to be under some illusion that we're here to debate Democrats versus Republicans. Unlike Michael, I'm not a partisan. I'm not here to blindly defend Democratic presidents. I don't really care what Harry Truman did. I already conceded presidents have done bad things, but no one has done stuff like Trump. Let me give you one example. 18 months he's been in office. 18 months. He's defied court cases, defied court orders in 1 in 8 cases. AP just did a story, the Associated Press the other day. 31 court cases that he lost, he's just ignoring the court orders. Presidents haven't done that before. They violated the Constitution. Then a court says, hey, you did something wrong. And then they fix it. They don't say F off to the judges. That is what this president does. Let me give you another example on the immigration front. Between October and February of this year, according to a recent study, hundreds of judges across the country ruled 4,400 times. I'm going to say that again. 4,400 times judges across this country ruled that Donald Trump and his administration were illegally detaining migrants in this country without due process. 4,400 times. You find me another president, I'll wait here all day, who has done that in a four-month period. 4,400 rulings by judges. By the way, in 1 in 4 cases where judges rule against Trump, these are Republican-appointed judges. Uh-oh. So this argument from Miller and co, these are all Marxists. No, these are judges, conservative, liberal, press Republicans, saying Donald Trump's violating the law even when it comes to migrants, even when it comes to foreign students who have a right to be here and have a free speech right under the Constitution. First Amendment covers foreign students in this room. I hope foreign students here know that.
I'm a little confused by my opponent's argument because he tells me he's not a partisan and he's not here to debate Republicans and Democrats. Almost the very first word out of his mouth was Mike Pence and appealing to all of these Republican judges. But listen, I think the Republican...
What kind of... God, I hate this guy. The reason why Mehdi is appealing to Republicans is because it's a strike against the idea, and I don't even have to say this because Mehdi himself said it like 20 times. It's a strike against this idea that these are all Marxist partisan judges. They're not. They're Republican judges that are ruling against you guys over and over and over again. That's why he's bringing it up. But Michael Knowles is a professional dipshit, so.
His mouth was Mike Pence and appealing to all of these Republican judges. But listen, I think the Republican Party is the worst party in the United States other than the Democrats. So, you know, I'm not here to... As my opponent does seem to be, to go tit for tat on Republicans versus Democrats. We're here to talk about the Constitution, and we can't talk about how the Constitution has actually governed the country unless we talk about the people who have effected it, and those people are Republicans and are Democrats. But I'm also confused by my opponent's reaction, and I think this might be because my opponent here has the misfortune to grow up in a foreign country. He did not learn proper English. You know, the United Kingdom, they don't. So maybe he misheard when I spoke. I answered in the affirmative. Of course, illegal aliens, in most cases, have the right to due process. But they don't have the right to lengthy due process. This has been...
Not lengthy due process. Oh, not lengthy due process.
The United Kingdom, they don't. So maybe he misheard when I spoke. I answered in the affirmative. Of course, illegal aliens, in most cases, have the right to due process. But they don't have the right to lengthy due process. This has been a precedent for many decades. And in all of those cases, my opponent here cites the AP, this involves problems with the courts generally involve delays more than outright refusals. And both Barack Obama and Joe Biden have also been guilty of the same delays. So, I'm happy that in this one case,
I'm sorry. I have a strong feeling on this, especially because I see it happen in my court case all the time. I think that federal judges need to be way more aggressive with contempt. I think so. I think that if you can demonstrate that somebody is being contemptuous of the court process, is delaying too much on following through with the court order, is ignoring preliminary injunctions, preliminary stays or whatever, like I think that judges need to start handing out these contempts way, 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 way more quickly. That's just my opinion. I think it's crazy how many times what's his name? Is it? It's not Boesberg. And like these other judges, the one in Minnesota, are like finding that the Trump admin is just goofing off over and over and over again. It's like, do something about it. Okay. Get the marshals out there, make them earn their paycheck. Go start rounding some of these motherfuckers up, arrest them, charge them with something, hold them in contempt. If they're not engaging honestly with the process.
You're in agreement. The illegal aliens deserve due process. And now that they have it, they need to get out.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for your thoughts. Remember, we're keeping this a nice, respectful debate.
And
oh my God. This is his alma mater, they said. Ugh, I hate this so much. Dude, Mehdi is a fucking, for however broken he might be on Israel Palestine, he's a debate assassin, okay? So this is just to protect Knowles. Oh, it's his dad, sorry. Okay.
We held you, we're keeping it respectful. I'd love to now talk about Ronald McGinnis. It's fine for long here, in the New Times, et cetera. Specifically, President Trump's Operation Epic Fury targeting Iran was carried out without prior authorization from Congress. This has reignited a longstanding constitutional debate over war powers. At the same time, President Trump has argued that involving Congress can pose operational risks, citing concerns about leaks and the need for speed in national security decisions. Mm. So the question is, how should we balance Congress's right to declare war with the practical demands of secrecy and rapid response in modern warfare? And was Trump's action significantly different from that?
By the way, there are arguments you might be able to make about what you should have to go to Congress for or what the fuck ever. That's not one of them. I can't talk to my Congress because I'm scared they're going to leak shit. Like, you can still have closed door hearings. You can do closed door stuff. We voted for the fucking war in Iraq. Like, this idea that, like, well, I can't tell Congress, they might leak it, is the most retarded possible excuse you could get for this. That's insane to me.
Or does it represent a growing trend among the executive branch? We'll start with you.
It's a great question, and I'm glad you mentioned the speed issue. Michael mentioned speed a moment ago when it came to migrants. No speed issue. Donald Trump bombs.
Dead ass, during the actual debate, the original shitty audio is better than this one.
Countries last year, after claiming to be the prince. There's no speed issue. Donald Trump bombed 7 countries last year, after claiming to be the peacemaker and insisting on a Nobel Peace Prize, but he got a FIFA one. Bombed 7 countries, which weren't attacking us. He started this year by bombing Venezuela and kidnapping the president of that country.
I'm sorry, cough for is too triggering. And they're going to be coughing the whole time. I can't, sorry. 35, 32.
7. Venezuela and kidnapping the president of that country. Again, not a country that was attacking us. There was no self-defense right, no UN resolution. You can only go to war in this country under international law if it's self-defense or if it's authorized by the UN. Not the case in Venezuela. Not the case in Iran. Iran obviously was not attacking us. We were in the middle of negotiations when we attacked them. And Marco Rubio admitted we attacked them because Israel was about to attack them, not they were about to attack us. So there was no speed. There was no justification. And it is a good question about balance. And again, I suspect Michael is going to say, well, all previous presidents have declared war without congressional approval, which isn't true, by the way. George W. Bush. I'm going to go home and take a shower after this, but I'm going to defend George W. Bush.
He's going to say
George W. Bush went and got an authorization for the use of military force against Afghanistan in 2001. He went and got an authorization for the use of military force against Iraq in 2002. Now I feel disgusting, but George Bush did that, right? Barack Obama, when he was about to bomb Syria, tried to go to Congress, couldn't get the vote, did not bomb Syria. Now, Libya, Barack Obama did go and violate the Constitution and the War Powers Act. I will agree with that. But let me say a couple of things here. Number one, Barack Obama, he would argue, let me make the case for why it's different, to go back to your question. There's no comparison between Iran and Libya. First, there was a UN resolution.
If you would have asked me to fucking make a prediction here, I would have never predicted that Mehdi Ghassan is going to provide the positive argument for why the United States needed to intervene in Libya. Most people hate this intervention, but interesting. Okay.
For Libya, which was being enforced by a NATO operation that the U.S. joined to stop an imminent massacre of people in Benghazi. That was the stated aim. No U.N. approval in Iran, no NATO mission in Iran, no imminent massacre of civilians. That happened not when we attacked. Number two, Barack Obama claimed it wasn't a war because it was a limited military operation because no American troops were at risk and no regional escalation. Well, in Iran, 13 Americans dead, hundreds of Americans injured, not just regional escalation, but global fallout, right? Americans suffering at the pump because of this war. And number three, I would say this. Look, this is undoubtedly unconstitutional against Congress. Donald Trump's admitted it. He said, if I call it a war, I'll have to get approval. And then he called it a war. But I will agree it was unconstitutional under Obama. I don't think it's unconstitutional under Trump. And I hope Michael will agree that we can both agree that in both cases, neither president was upholding the Constitution. I'll add that to my list of constitutional abuses by Donald Trump tonight.
Can you agree?
Well, I'm just glad that my opponent continues to eschew comparisons to past presidents, that between the Democrats and the Republicans. But you're right. I was going to bring up Libya because This involves not only the Constitution, but the War Powers Act. One thing it doesn't involve, though, I'm a little bit confused. Are we debating tonight UN resolutions? Are we debating the NATO Charter? I thought we were debating constitutionality, and I suspect Mr. Hassan is deferring to these other organizations because there was not a great constitutional predicate for what happened in Libya. The War Powers Act gives the president the ability to wage war without the approval of Congress for 60 days, and then it can be extended for an additional 30 days to take it to 90. Now, the president, as the commander-in-chief of the military, already has a constitutional predicate to lead the military. However, what Barack Obama did in Libya did not just go for 60 or 90 days. It went for 8 months. How about Joe Biden? Joe Biden waged war in Yemen against the Houthis. That went on for a year. I didn't hear a peep from the people concerned about the shredding of the Constitution. But when it comes to the war...
I believe it's stupid, and it seems to contradict Obama, but I thought that the AUMF, the Authorization for Use of Military Force, as annoying as it is, I thought that applied to the entire theater of the Middle East with respect to perceived terrorist groups. Now, this is obviously the fucking broadest thing possible, but technically I believe that the Authorization for the Use of Military Force does cover the entire greater Middle East region with respect to if you consider them a terrorist group, I believe. It's technically legal, but... Because Donald Trump carried on all these same warfares against, like, Yemen and the Houthis and everything as well for even longer.
In Iran, I'll put my thoughts on the table. I was skeptical of the war before it began. I was skeptical when it was declared. I remain skeptical of it today. Happily for me, I don't need to convince you to support the war in Iran. It's a combination of the liberal pronunciation and the conservative pronunciation, Iran and Iran. I don't need to convince you to support the war. I don't need to convince you to like Donald Trump. I don't need to convince you this is a good military operation. I just need to show you that what Trump is doing is well within constitutional rules. It's, in fact, much more restrained than anything his recent predecessors have done. I'll remind you that the past presidents, George W. excepted, we think of Ronald Reagan... Grenada. We think of George H.W. Bush in Panama, but we can go back even further than that. We go to Harry Truman, who waged a war that went on for 3 years without any formal declaration of war. So we can say that war is very bad and Trump shouldn't be in Iran, but the topic at hand is whether or not Trump is within the constitutional mainstream, and at that, he's actually quite moderate.
So... 60 seconds, let me just quickly respond. Number one, the bigger point, let me start with the bigger point, which is Michael's whataboutism tonight, which is keeping pointing to previous presidents. As I pointed out, the analogies don't work. They're not the same in many of the cases he's citing. And even if they were the same, all that would prove is that previous presidents didn't uphold the Constitution either. The debate tonight is Donald Trump upholding the Constitution? We can all agree he isn't. Michael seems to agree he isn't. His only defense is, well, other presidents didn't uphold it either. Let's just deal with some facts. The UN Charter is not some foreign body. The UN Charter was incorporated into US law as a treaty in a Senate vote in 1945 by a vote of 89-2. It is the law of the land. Donald Trump violated the UN Charter and violated international law and US law by bombing Iran. He violated Congress by bombing Iran, and he violated the War Powers Act. By the way, Michael is completely wrong. The War Powers Act does not give you the power to declare war without congressional approval. Exactly the opposite. It says if you go to war without congressional approval, which is wrong, you have to notify us within 48 hours, and then you have 60 days to stop, which he hasn't done. He crossed 60 days last week, so he's doubly illegal. In fact, Una Hathaway of Yale University, professor of international law, says this war is triply illegal because it's against the UN Charter, it's against US Congress's right under the Constitution, and it's against the War Powers Act. That doesn't apply to Libya, by the way. So Trump is unique there. And this idea that he was following Congress when he bombed Yemen last year, when he bombed Nigeria on Christmas Day, remember that? Probably not, because he bombed so many countries without congressional approval. The idea that he's upholding the Constitution while stealing Congress's right to declare war and bombing multiple countries is absurd.
I would like to stay on this foreign policy avenue and talk a little bit about Venezuela. So President Donald Trump characterized former Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro as quote, terrorist, and cited his indictment on drug-related charges as justification for the U.S. military raid in Caracas in early 2026. By framing military action in Venezuela as a law enforcement action, does that expand presidential power in ways that unfairly bypass Congress, or is that a necessary adaptation to modern threats?
You absolutely cannot enforce, like, internationally your law system. This is just, like, the most, like, not okay thing. You can never do this. This is obviously not good. You can't do this. These are war crimes. You can't go and enforce law in another country, your own law. It's just so stupid. This is peak stupidity.
No, it's certainly not outside the norms. It doesn't expand presidential power. Toppling dictatorships in Latin America is as American as apple pie.
It's not in a good way, but okay.
I can't help but call out a rather dishonest tactic that my opponent here is using.
Uh-oh.
He keeps suggesting what aboutism, because I'm making historical comparisons and invoking presidents of both parties. I would like to point out my opponent opened the debate. He made the first statement, and he began by doing just that. So I think it's good that he did that, actually, because there is no way to understand what it means to uphold the Constitution without reference to history. And in the case of Latin America, obviously, our history goes back a very long way. The Monroe Doctrine is a cornerstone, perhaps the cornerstone of American foreign policy. And there was a legal predicate, the test of Nicolas Maduro. In the case of President Trump's military actions, by the way, it's worth observing that we never hear why he is engaging in these conflicts. In Nigeria, of course, why would you bomb Nigeria on Christmas Day? Might have to do with the genocide of Christians that is going on in Nigeria and America's role as the global hegemon, which, again, like it or not, is pretty well predicated. But returning to the specific topic at hand, Nicolas Maduro, it had been an aspect of American foreign policy for some 26 years to depose the regime in Venezuela. We had a legal reason to do it. Not only were they stealing our goods, but they were also sending criminals into our country, helping to flood our country, break our basic laws, and they were working with designated foreign terrorist organizations. So any way you slice it, we had the right to arrest him. A lawless president would have just blown his head off, as we've done before. But President Trump did not do that. Nicolas Maduro is enjoying due process of law in New York City, and it's probably a much nicer place than Venezuela is. So I look forward to
oil
prices going down. I look forward to a flourishing country, and I look forward to the recognition that President Trump's policy in Venezuela is not only out of step with American constitutional norms, it is in fact part of American grand strategy dating back to 1999.
Prison in America is a nicer place than Venezuela.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just deal with some issues that you raised there. Michael made an admission he perhaps shouldn't have made there. Do you notice what he said about Maduro? He said, a lawless president. His words. Am I being dishonest? Is that what you said? A lawless president.
Not with reference to Trump.
But you said a lawless president would have just killed him. That's funny. Because what did we do in Iran on day one of that war?
Uh-oh.
We kill the leader of Iran. So by Michael's definition, Donald Trump is a lawless president. He went to war in Iran without congressional approval, without a UN Security Council resolution, as we've already discussed. He went to war in Venezuela without a congressional approval or a UN Security Council resolution. The idea that he did it because the guy's a drug trafficker is hilarious. I'm no defender of Maduro. Let's see what the court says. But he pardoned another Latin American head of government who was in American prison for cocaine trafficking into the US. He pardoned him. So real consistency there when it comes to drug trafficking. As for Nigeria, number one, it's not a genocide of Christians. The First Lady of Nigeria is a Christian. The Defense Minister is a Christian. Terrorist groups like ISIS in Nigeria and Boko Haram kill Muslims and Christians alike. It's a horrific violence, but it's not a Christian genocide. No one actually believes that. And even if it was, that's not the debate. The debate is, did he have the legal right to bomb Nigeria? Or did he have to go to Congress? Which he did not. He never goes to Congress.
True.
And let's take a step back here. Let's get out of the weeds here. What is the common thread tonight? It's not about just migrants or free speech or students or wars. It is about a president who doesn't just test the limit of the law. He puts himself above the law. Donald Trump doesn't recognize congressional restrictions. He doesn't recognize Supreme Court restrictions. Michael doesn't want to talk about a 9-0 Supreme Court ruling saying you got to facilitate the return of Kilmer Abrego Garcia. And Trump says to an ABC reporter, I could, but I'm not going to. No president has done that before. You want to play whataboutism? And it is whataboutism. Tell me, which president said after a 9-0 ruling, I'm not going to do it. There hasn't been one. It's only Donald Trump who does this when it comes to war, when it comes to migration, when it comes to Supreme Court. That is why we're saying he does not uphold the Constitution, because the evidence is clear. And if Trump were here tonight, he'd probably say, yeah, you're right.
True.
Well, my opponent got a great laugh line just now, but unfortunately, he only did so
by
misrepresenting the facts. One, there's a difference between Venezuela and Iran. But furthermore, when we look at Iran...
there is. True. They're different countries.
One,
true.
We were not the ones that killed the Ayatollah. That was the Israelis. And my opponent loves to complain about the Israelis. Perhaps he can do it tonight or another time. But that was the Israelis who did it. So we do have to get basic facts right.
Is that true? Did different people get credit for different parts of the strikes there? I don't know 100%, but I don't know.
We provided air support.
Trump took credit for it. You know that.
We provided air support. Weren't the attacks all like bombings from... I don't know.
He's publicly taken credit.
If we could avoid the interruption, I just want to point out that your laugh line is based on a complete misunderstanding that actually happened. But I'll try to finish my point. I think that gives you a good sense of where we stand on international expertise. Because also, Venezuela is a different country from Iran. Iran has been waging war against the United States for some...
Somebody said, quote, as part of a series of Israeli airstrikes aimed at high-ranking Iranian officials.
So. 50 years now, they obviously killed over 200 American troops in the Beirut barracks bombings, and we have not retaliated for that in a serious way. Iran since then has killed many American troops throughout the Middle East. Wow. There was a very strong legal predicate for taking out the Ayatollah, even if you think it's not a prudential thing to do. Whereas the very different intervention into Venezuela...
Well, then why didn't he just get congressional approval for it? It was so obvious and so easy and so, like, such a no-brainer, right?
Involved orders from judges, involved the commission of crimes, and now there will be a trial in New York. So the one similarity between the two, and perhaps we can agree on this, is that the intervention into Venezuela was rather restrained. We didn't actually depose the regime. We just put a gun to...
The intervention in Venezuela was restrained when we went in and abducted their leader. Okay.
Of the deputy and said, play nice or it's going to be you next. And I don't know that we're going to depose the regime in Iran either. A more expansive president might do that, as Republicans and Democrats have done. Trump, once again, I point out, is so restrained here, so moderate, so well within the mainstream that we aren't even seeing regime change in either of those places.
He's doing tricks on it, guys.
Well, I think it was briefly mentioned the idea of emergency acts and extenuating circumstances, and I want to zoom in on that. President Donald Trump argued that his imposition of tariffs during Liberation Day was justified under the International Emergencies Economic Powers Act, or the IEEPA. However, the Supreme Court found the IEEPA does not authorize the president to impose sweeping tariffs such as that in Liberation Day. With this in mind, how should we think about the limits of presidential authority when it comes to using emergency powers to shape major policy?
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Take it away.
I'm going to cheat before I answer that question. I'm going to go back to something Michael said a moment ago, because facts don't matter. The war in Iran is a joint U.S.-Israeli operation. The idea that Israel killed Khamenei on their own is absurd. If you look at the reporting, Netanyahu came to Trump. Trump's intelligence agency came and confirmed that Khamenei was in this building, this time, at this place. Do you want to kill him? So let's just be very clear that we are responsible for that. There was no international legal justification for it. Every international law professor says it was illegal. Every international lawyer says what happened in Venezuela was illegal. We defied. There's a reason why our own allies don't back us in these places. On emergency powers, a great question. We can actually talk specifics. You mentioned Supreme Court. You'll notice, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think, and this is good faith, I swear, I don't think Michael has said the word Supreme Court tonight. Maybe I missed it. But let's talk specifics. I mentioned the 9-0 ruling by the Supreme Court on Kilmar Brigo Garcia. Trump just said F off. The tariffs case in February, we all knew tariffs are taxes. Everyone knew that. The Trump administration tried to lie to us and say they're not taxes. You know, the Trump administration wants to, what's the phrase, piss on your leg and tell you it's raining, right? It's not a tax. It is a tax. Every economist agrees it's a tax. Every lawyer agrees it's a tax. So the Supreme Court step in and say, well, you know, the taxing and spending clause says only Congress gets to lay and impose taxes, excises, imposts, and duties. And they strike down 6-3. 6-3. Not even close. In February, the IEEPA used by Donald Trump and say you need to refund the tariffs.
True.
By the way, the refunds begin next week, and 75,000 businesses have asked for refunds, which is weird because I was told China's paying the tariffs. But anyways, on the specific legal part, this is really interesting because Donald Trump used the IEEPA, which is an act from the 1970s, 1977, which you can use in an economic emergency. Trump claimed the emergency was fentanyl and migration and trade deficits. He claimed there was a national emergency because we have a trade deficit. Okay. And then, here's the best part. He uses the act to go after his enemies, like he always does. Like he goes after his political enemies, he goes after his international enemies. He uses the act completely illegally, as the Supreme Court's pointed out, to basically settle scores. And we know this. How do we know this? Because Trump said so. When the Swiss president called him up to negotiate a reduced tariff, he raised the tariff and said, I did it because she rubbed me up the wrong way. She was annoying. She was aggressive. So he raised the taxes. The Brazilians prosecuted Jair Bolsonaro. Good for them. I wish we had done it to Trump. Trump got mad and raised tariffs on American consumers to punish Brazil. That's what the founders envisaged. That's what the founders thought they were doing when we were getting away from Mad King George from my old country. Was that what they thought we were doing? Giving the president the right to tax Americans because he gets pissed off by a European leader or a South American government? Of course it's an abuse of power. Of course it's completely unconstitutional. Of course it goes against the vision of the founders. That is very, very clear.
I'm reminded of a meme that I see sometimes in Catholic circles. There's a meme of a guy goes into the confessional box. He says, Father, I like to hop on one leg while eating a piece of pizza and honking my nose. And the priest says, my son, that is very weird, but it is not a sin. And that's the example that Mehdi seems to be giving here. He says, I really hate what Trump did on these tariffs.
Is that a Catholic Christian? Is that a Lutheran? Who? What? Oh, okay.
And But one of the mechanisms by which Trump implemented the tariffs, the Supreme Court rejected, and the administration, being very well within the constitutional mainstream, accepted that and then attempted to use other statutes to implement some other tariffs. But nevertheless, they accepted the Supreme Court's rulings, as they generally do. And so you might say, I hate tariffs. You might say, I don't like the way President Trump conducts diplomacy. I'm speaking to a group of Ivy League students, obviously, probably many of you think that. But there is nowhere that I see that to be unconstitutional. I mean, for goodness sakes, the Republican Party was founded on tariffs. Abraham Lincoln famously said, give me a tariff and I'll give you the best country in the world. The Republican Party was pro-tariff through the early 20th century. It flipped a little bit in the mid to late 20th century, and now we seem to like tariffs again. Presidents of both parties levy tariffs through a variety of mechanisms. You can say it's bad economic policy, but there's certainly nothing unconstitutional about it. To Mehdi's point that the companies are eating the cost of the tariffs in many cases. That is true. I know this because I own a company called Mayflower Cigars, which makes great cigars, and I highly recommend them. But we did eat the cost about it. To Mehdi's point that the companies are eating the cost of the tariffs in many cases. That is true. I know this because I own a company called Mayflower Cigars, which makes great cigars, and I highly recommend them. But we did eat the cost of it.
That means Americans are eating the cost. They're American companies. And you won't eat the cost forever. You have to pass it on eventually. You have to.
Thank you very much. We did eat the cost of a lot of the tariffs. That's true. And I do wonder if, as a political tactic, the refunds for those tariffs that are forthcoming might actually help juice the economy before the midterm. So in a way, it's probably a good political tactic.
It's a good political tactic to steal money from the American people in a manner that we now agree the Supreme Court said was illegal so that you could give it back to them as a... Okay, bro.
But I've yet to see some argument that the tariffs would have been unconstitutional. You know, the point that we've observed here is that the Supreme Court struck them down under the basis of a national emergency, and the Trump White House complied. So what are we even arguing here?
So, Michael, since you were the one who introduced the word a dishonest tactic, let me say it back to you. I think you're engaged in dishonest tactic tonight by avoiding the substance of argument every time.
Uh-oh.
It's not whether there's a genocide in Nigeria. The issue is, did Donald Trump have the constitutional power to bomb Nigeria? No. It's not whether tariffs are good or bad. That's irrelevant to this debate. Of course, tariffs are totally fine. If Congress imposed them, not Donald Trump, because he didn't like the female leader of Switzerland as she spoke to him on the phone. That is the key question that we're debating tonight. At every instance, every question that Ella's asked, every topic we've covered, I've pointed out that what he's doing is going against the Constitution, going against the Supreme Court, going against Trump-appointed judges, going against precedents that you like to cite, and you're dodging it. And you're saying things about, well, tariffs are part of our history. Okay, great. This is not about tariffs. It's about what Donald Trump did with tariffs. He took a power from the Constitution, the Taxing and Spending Clause, Article 1, Section 8, only Congress shall have the power to lay or collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, and he arrogated it to himself because he believes there are no checks on his power. He's on the record. He said in 2019, I have an Article 2 power to do whatever I want as president. That's not what Article 2 says.
He also tweeted out, he who saves his country violates no law or whatever, right?
He does not have the power to do whatever he wants. The founding fathers did not create America so that they could have another monarch, another king, another dictator. But no one seems to have given that memo to Donald Trump. And when he lost at the Supreme Court, Michael said he accepted the decision. Again, dishonest. He actually said that the judges were fools and lapdogs. He said Amy Coney Barrett and Neil Gorsuch embarrassed themselves in front of their families. And he also said that the Supreme Court justices are weak, stupid, and bad. Again, point to me a president who said stuff like that in the modern era.
All right. Well, this is unfortunately our last moderated question before we go to audience Q&A, and I would like to bring it back closer to home.
Amazing debate so far.
You've both experienced elite higher education.
Okay, never mind. I understand why Noel's got to do this debate, because the format is so insanely restrictive.
Except I would argue your father, Dartmouth, experienced the best higher education. And I'm sure you have seen the recent changes in dynamics between U.S. universities and the federal government. As debates over free speech and ideological diversity intensify on campuses, what role, if any, should the federal government play in ensuring viewpoint diversity? And what would that role look like within constitutional limits? I believe you started last time.
Yes, I actually don't love viewpoint diversity. I don't really care for it at all. I know that puts me outside the right-wing mainstream, but I'm perfectly fine with institutions having beliefs and standards and norms, and I think societies ought to have that. Even the notion of protecting viewpoint diversity is relatively recent, comes from the mid-90s in our jurisprudence.
What would that role look like within constitutional limits? I believe you started last time.
Yes, I actually don't love viewpoint diversity. I don't really care for it at all. I know that puts me outside the right-wing mainstream, but I'm perfectly fine with institutions having beliefs and standards and norms, and I think societies ought to have that. Even the notion of protecting viewpoint diversity is relatively recent, comes from the mid-90s in our jurisprudence. But regardless, I'm all for reforming the universities, which are failing in their chief missions. So I suppose the question is President Trump suppressing the First Amendment? And I know that my opponent here on stage made a bold prediction, a promise, really, in March of 2024. He said that if President Trump were to be elected again, the stakes for the media were very, very high. What would happen to the free press under President Trump? You know, he's already threatening to do it. Last I checked, unfortunately, the New York Times and CNN still get to publish. MSNBC has sort of gone downhill, but that's mostly because NBC didn't want to deal with them anymore. There's been really no threat to free speech whatsoever.
I can't say anything.
President Trump. His critics are allowed to...
Michael Knowles, by the way, literally tweeted out like 2 weeks ago that he wants people like me to go to jail. Okay? Like just unfucking believably subhuman cretinous behavior. Just unbelievable how disgusting these fucking people are.
And to kill him, I mean, in the case of Hassan Piker, one of the chief critics of President Trump and one of the people who's instigated violence was exalted by the New York Times just last week after three assassination attempts. So I wish that, frankly, there were more limits on speech under Trump, but there certainly is not. And then when you look at constitutional precedent, we, of course, have to remember that our second president of the United States, John Adams, passed the Alien and Sedition Acts, much of which remains on the books today. Under Woodrow Wilson, Democrat president, he imprisoned his political rival, Eugene Debs, the leader of the Socialist Party. But that act has been used to prosecute people for speech for many, many years, including the socialist journalist, the head of the Jehovah's Witnesses, the leaker of the Pentagon Papers, and Bradley Manning, even under Barack Obama. So we've seen a lot of curtailment of speech. I think a lot of that is within the confines of the First Amendment, and I wish that President Trump would tighten it up a little bit, especially when it comes to those left-wing universities that receive federal dollars and certainly don't need to.
That is an amazing answer, Michael. Both to deny that there's an assault on the free press and to say you wish that there was a bit more of an assault on the free press. Let's just be very clear about where the facts are on this. Michael thinks everything's fine. Okay. Donald Trump has arrested Don Lemon. He's raided the home of a Washington Post reporter.
We've got multiple civil lawsuits against the Wall Street Journal. There's been like two or three that he settled. He tried to sue just the pollster Seltzer out of business because he didn't like the poll they made. We've got the DOJ issuing indictments against political enemies. He brought up the FCC thing in Kimmel.
AP from the Oval Office. He tried to defund NPR and PBS. A judge shot it down. He's tried to ban flag burning, which goes against Supreme Court case.
They wrote an executive order on it. Remember that?
Texas versus Johnson from 1989. He's tried to get a late night comedian fired because he didn't like his jokes. He has just go down the list when it comes to the free press. They tried to restrict reporters reporting at the Pentagon. A judge shot that down too, saying you're not supposed to prescribe the press. He has threatened the New York Times just the other day. He said they should be guilty of sedition because they reported on his Iran war in a way he did not like. He has engaged in multiple lawsuits to try to intimidate and suppress the press. His defense secretary bragged loudly that CNN will be coming under new Trump pro-Trump ownership. Just go down the list. Students. We talk about universities. We've seen students arrested for their speech, not for violence, for their speech. A Reagan-appointed judge said the arrest of students like Mahmoud Khalil and Ramesh Ostog was a full-throated assault on the First Amendment. A Reagan-appointed judge, William Young, said that, not some liberal Marxist. And as for, you know, threatening people's speech, just the other day, just a few months ago, Donald Trump threatened six members of Congress with death for their speech. He said, seditious behavior, punishable by death. What did they do? They did a video saying, hey, military, don't follow illegal orders. He said, you should be killed for that. This is the most anti-free speech, anti-free press, anti-viewpoint diversity administration in American history. It's led by a complete snowflake who can't tolerate any criticism.
One of the things that Republicans have done to cheat is they, you know how we used to have like in Minecraft or in a video game? For them, they just do like the in court, right? This guy needs to be, we need to kill this guy. After he's found guilty of seditious conspiracy, this guy needs to be executed after being found guilty in a court of law of treason. Oh, shit. Good one.
From anyone, can't tolerate jokes from late night comedians. Think about the countries where comedians are taken off the airwaves because the leader didn't like their jokes. Are those constitutional democracies? Are those constitutional republics? Are those democracies that we think Americans have? Think about that when you vote tonight. Think about the kind of place where the president threatens students, threatens media organizations, threatens comedians, and threatens members of the other party while arresting journalists. The whole thing is absurd to suggest he's not an anti-First Amendment president. He's actually at the core of my argument for why he's not upholding the Constitution, because he's not upholding the First Amendment.
I think it's very telling that my opponent objects to the arrest of Don Lemon, which was not, in fact, for free speech, but was because Don Lemon violated federal law and bragged about it on camera.
Like this format, Medi is so cucked in this format. It's such bullshit because this is the only way that these fucking losers can survive is to be in a format where they can just lie and lie and lie and lie and lie with no fact correction. And I think that that hardcore British interview style excels the most when they can fact check you and hold you to account when you just say a fucking lie. But as long as Knowles can just rattle off 10 lies while he's giving some bullshit ass waste of time 30, 60 second answer, then it's like, oh God, I hate this format so much.
If you'll allow me to finish, I'm trying to engage in my free speech and there seems to be a heckler's veto.
My free speech too.
So what Don Lemon actually did was he violated a federal law, the FACE Act. He walked in with an unruly mob to disrupt a religious proceeding. This terrorized children. He did all sorts of terrible things. Targeted Christians.
I've never wanted to take like a strong stance on this just because I haven't seen like the footage. And maybe there's bad stuff out there that I'm just not aware of. But like, I just never saw any of what was claimed about the breaking into the church. Like, I saw the interview where he walked in and they were talking to the guy, but like the rioting or like attacking or any of that, like the people were in the church protesting for sure, but like, was there any footage or anything of this happening of them like breaking down a door or them like damaging stuff or screaming and attacking people.
No surprise that that would be given a pass from the man who denied the genocide of Christians in Nigeria tonight, noticing a touch of a trend. But to bring us back to the point, the defunding of PBS is somehow a violation of the First Amendment. I thought that the president and the Congress had the right to, take care to make sure that the laws are effected and executed. And also, Congress has the power of the purse. I didn't know PBS and Big Bird were in the First Amendment to the Constitution. That would be news to James Madison. When it comes to... The curtailment of reporters. No one has been more transparent than President Trump. He answers the phone. He answers the phone when CNN journalists call him. I would never do any such thing. But the president does that. He has open gaggles, very contrary to his immediate predecessor, Joe Biden. And so, yet again, President Trump has exalted the First Amendment. In fact, he has embraced a free speech. He has embraced a free speech absolutist.
Like this should be studied. This is like crazy. He's doing tricks on it, bro. Like unbelievable tricks. Like 20 years of experience.
Even when it comes to flag burning, I'll just finish up on this point. Mehdi Hasan points out that the flag burning was ruled a constitutionally protected right in 1989. Curious that it wasn't 1889 or 1789. It's a live question debated in American jurisprudence. President Trump has issued an executive order to bring that challenge back to the court, as he should. And we'll all be debating it along the way because President Trump loves free speech.
All right. Well, we're going to pivot to audience Q&A. We'll have two mic runners, one on either aisle. I will call on three people to go to each mic runner, so six in total. I'll do you, blue shirt, another blue shirt, there's a lot of blue shirts, a white shirt, blue shirt, red shirt, and then green shirt. So three over there and three over there. Perfect. If we have more time, we will take more student questions. Great.
Nature.
Yeah, so thank you guys so much for coming today. A lot of the conversation circulated particularly around Trump's second term activities. I was just curious to the question of not whether Trump upheld the Constitution in with regards to January 6th, but did he uphold constitutional norms?
Great question. Is that for any one of us in particular?
Particularly you, Michael, but either of you could go at it.
Sure,
yeah. 2 minutes and 2 minutes.
Yeah, sure thing. Yes, he did. Again, I'm not convincing anyone that they should like love the horn hat guy. That's not the basis on which you're voting this evening. But there is a great precedent for contested elections in the United States. In fact, that's what
they did in 1965 in Hawaii.
12th Amendment is about. We've had a number of contested elections. Obviously, 1860, the election of Lincoln, the Rutherford v. Hayes, which resulted in the Compromise of 1876. Bush v. Gore, Al Gore refused to concede for months after that. And there were.
I thought he accepted the Supreme Court ruling the day it came out. Am I wrong? I thought one of the biggest criticisms that people had of Gore was, why did you concede as soon as the Supreme Court ruled against it? I thought that was always one of the biggest. When did Gore concede election? I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong. When did the Supreme Court issue their ruling? He conceded on December 13th, 2000. So that was about a month before the electoral vote count. But I guess that maybe they tried to fight the Supreme Court decision for about a month, but hold on. Damn, motherfucker tried to concede on election night. I promised that I wouldn't call him back this time, Gore said, referring to the moment on election night when he called Bush to tell him he was going to concede and then called back a half hour later to retract that concession. Fucking libs, man. Where is this wouldn't concede for months thing at? This is just not true at all. I don't know. He's just lying. Fucking loser.
Obviously, 1860, the election of Lincoln, the Rutherford v. Hayes, which resulted in the Compromise of 1876. Bush v. Gore, Al Gore refused to concede for months after that, and there were some riotous events. So what occurred at the Capitol on January 6th was very unfortunate.
Riotous events, by the way, around the Gore election were the... what was it called? It wasn't Stonewall. It was... what was it called? It was Roger Stone's Brooks Brothers. Brooks Brothers riots. Tell me if this sounds familiar, by the way. Roger Stone led, by the way. The Brooks Brothers riot was a demonstration led by Republican staffers at a meeting of election canvassers in Miami-Dade County, Florida, United States, on November 22nd, 2000, during a recount of votes made during the 2000 United States presidential election with the goal of shutting down the recount. After demonstrations and acts of violence, local officials shut down the recount early. That's what that Supreme Court decision was about, by the way, that people got so ass pain, rightfully so, about, because they were within their recount trigger thing, and the Supreme Court basically shut down the recount and then gave the election to Bush. The Brooks Brothers Brigade to oppose the recount of ballots during the Florida election recount.
Lied about. It's worth pointing out that the only person who was killed in political violence that day was a Trump supporter who was killed by a trigger-happy cop. There's also a special irony to Democrats complaining about January 6th as the worst day in the history of this or any republic.
What about the BLM riots?
Because not only was it not the worst political violence in American history, it wasn't the worst political violence of that year. It followed the little prosecuted BLM riots that very same year, where Kamala...
Which happened in one day and one event, by the way.
Harris and staffers for Joe Biden actually...
By the way, they actually supported that because they bailed all the prisoners out. Kamala Harris retweeted Minnesota Bail Fund one time, by the way. It got like 20 likes, by the way. But that's what he's about to say.
BLM riots that very same year, where Kamala Harris and staffers for Joe Biden actually bailed the rioters out of jail. But there's a greater irony.
That's not true. That was also a fucking lie. But this guy's an actual hell spawn from fucking Satan, so he just lies about fucking everything.
Five or six, depending on how you score it, attacks on the Capitol in American history. Virtually all of them have been perpetrated by radical leftists, a Marxist Harvard professor, Harvardman, of course. But then one in 1971 was perpetrated by Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground. Bill Ayers, in whose living room
Barack Obama... Personal friend, by the way, Barack Obama. All this, I've heard these conspiracies my whole life.
Obama launched his political career. So it's very unfortunate that took place on January 6th. It's unfortunate that there were questions about the 2020 election, questions which arose because the election rules were radically changed in the weeks and months before the election, in some cases unconstitutionally, as in the case of mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's also a bit strange that Nancy Pelosi took responsibility for not...
Oh, this claim because Nancy Pelosi in a car was like, you know, this is our fault, we should have done better or something. And they're like, oh, see, she took responsibility for the whole thing because these guys can't conceive of, they can't even fathom a president that would actually take responsibility for anything, let alone stuff that's directly his fault.
Having sufficient security at the Capitol that day, she did that on camera. It was actually a film that her daughter made. You can easily go look it up. And it's very strange that some of the Capitol police gave the leaders of the insurrection private tours of the Capitol, notably the aforementioned horn hat guy. But regardless, it's a great pity that it took place. I hope it doesn't take place again. And unfortunately, it's also not totally out of the norm for the United States, going back at least to the middle of the 19th century.
So glad you asked that question, because January 6th hadn't come up, and it was a big issue from Trump's end of his first term. Mike Pence, we talked about Mike Pence.
Why does Mike Pence keep coming?
Because you're a fan of his.
He should shut him down. Why is he interrupting? Excuse me.
The vice president who didn't endorse the president for another term because he said he made me do unconstitutional stuff. He wanted me to violate my constitutional oath. That's from Mike Pence's testimony. You want to dismiss it because you know there's no comeback for it. You cite Al Gore. Al Gore never incited an insurrection. There is no precedent for January 6th. There was.
Even worse, Knowles did something tricky there. He said there were riots around the 2000 election. The one that he's referring to, there was one. It was a Republican-led one to stop the recount. But he was very tricky when he brought that up.
We were used to peaceful transfers of power. Richard Nixon agreed, even though he's probably robbed by JFK. Al Gore agreed, even though he's probably robbed by George W. Bush. Donald Trump actually lost, for sure. And he still didn't accept it and incited a riot. Michael says, Democrats thought it was the worst day in history. Do you know who said, bar none, it was the most horrifying day in America?
Ben Shapiro?
American politics in my lifetime.
Mike Pence.
No.
I don't know. You're just quoting him, so I guess.
Ben Shapiro?
It was Ben Shapiro on January the 7th. He said it was the most horrifying day.
Yep. That your boss, by the way.
In American politics, a noted Democrat,
but
Ben Shapiro,
said that,
on January the 7th. So let's just deal with some facts here. The people who attacked the Capitol were not going on private tours. They were not just a horn hat guy. It was people like Daniel Rodriguez, who assaulted Michael Fanone, put him in a stroke, got 12 years in prison. The judge said he was an army of hate and violence. Donald Trump pardoned him. It was people like Andrew Paul Johnson, who was just sentenced to life in prison for sexually abusing two children in Florida. Donald Trump pardoned him for January the 6th. He pardoned a neo-Nazi called Bradley Tyler Dykes, who did a Sieg Heil salute as he attacked police officers. These are the people Trump pardoned. Michael has never condemned Trump for that. Harry Sisson asked Michael on his show earlier this year, would you condemn Donald Trump for doing that? And he wouldn't answer the question. He said, I'll never condemn Donald Trump. Do you condemn Donald Trump for pardoning neo-Nazis, domestic abusers, pedophiles?
Well, hold on. Was he one?
Do you condemn Trump for pardoning?
I'm just asking a clarifying question about that guy. Was he one of the neo-Nazis who was getting $3 million from the SPLC, or was he a different?
Oh, my God. Was there any individual that got maybe over 5 years or something? Oh, they do. They love that indictment. They love that indictment, bro.
nice diversion. I'm not Harry Sisson. I'll use up my time. Do you condemn Donald Trump for pardoning neo-Nazis, violent criminals, people who assaulted 140 police officers on January 6th?
One last real clarification.
He went up, sir.
One last real clarification.
I'll ask again. Simple question. Do you support pardoning the 600 people who were charged with assaulting police officers?
Did he pardon them for Daniel Gendian?
He pardoned them for assaulting police.
Oh.
Do you support them?
All right.
He has an answer.
Assaulting police. Nazis in Hedfield.
Donald Trump for pardoning.
I have
600 people who assaulted police officers. Fourth time. Can you do it?
I'm happy to. I condemn pedophilia,
neo-Nazis.
And I
see, it should be like an hour and a half debate of that, and then Knowles would just be crying by the end. But
format, we're gonna stick to the debate format. We're not gonna.
I bet Knowles and her that they probably had a very big conversation on moderation and everything beforehand. I asked at the beginning of this, why would Knowles agree to this debate? But it's because it has to be on this hyper specific format so that Knowles gets to walk away from this going, oh well, I debated Betty Hassan. Like, nah, dude, this was like a like they're having a pillow fight, basically.
You don't want to answer the question. I'm happy to answer on the substance. If you like, so obviously, Mehdi's being very, very dishonest. President Trump didn't pardon anybody for pedophilia or Nazis or whatever nonsense. If you'll allow me to finish. So what he pardoned them for is because there was a massive prosecution of thousands of people on January 6th that was politically motivated, that was disproportionate because the federal government had let all of the leftist rioters who, unlike the January 6thers, killed dozens of people and it resulted in over $1 billion worth of property damage, let them off the hook and, in fact, raised money to bail them out of jail. And so because of the unjust prosecutions where you had Midwestern grannies who were not pedophiles or Nazis, but who were eccentric ladies, who walked around the Capitol despite all of the lies suggesting police officers were killed. If that was not true, the coroner's proof that. So he recognized
there were at least two officers that died for sure because of January 6th,
proportionate prosecution.
Or
the same goes
three?
For the pro-life grannies who were arrested by Joe Biden, who were imprisoned for praying at abortion clinics. President Trump pardoned them.
Arrested by Joe Biden?
For the pro-life grannies who were arrested by Joe Biden, who were
pro-life, so I don't know anything about those ones.
Prison for praying at abortion clinics. President Trump pardoned them. Now, on the pardon power.
Would this have been arrested by Biden, or would these have been state police if they were protesting outside abortion clinics? Okay.
Look, there are lots of bad pardons that go on. Joe Biden took it to an egregious degree. But
he didn't.
Pardon power is absolute, and
he's talking about the Hunter Biden stuff, really.
If we're here to defend the Constitution, we would have to defend the plain words of Article 2, which say the president has the pardon power.
Okay, thank you both. I appreciate the sentiments. We're going to keep interruptions to a minimum.
Why, yes.
To be fair, it wasn't exceptional. I gave up my time to ask a question. He didn't answer it six times.
Mm-hmm. Okay, first off, true. Mehdi, big fan. I love your work. To Michael, I would like to say, so there is a new, I think, with your assault on free speech and how we should, in your words, tighten. There's a new act proposed by Congress, the Mamdani Act. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, but I like
the sound of it. It is a measures against Marxist defenders and noxious Islamists Act. And it essentially extends the power of the federal government, especially by Trump, to deny citizenship, to deny entry, and to essentially deport, to go to these ICE, you know, horrible camps, any person who is a radical Islamist or a communist or any other sort of leftist. Gives very broad powers. Do you support that? And is that constitutional at all?
Well, I love the acronym. And I take it from your description of the act, when you mentioned that this would be a way to deport people, to deny them visas, to deny them entry to schools, or that the people we're talking about here are not American citizens. So it's really crucial to recognize here a point that is being glossed over, which is that when Mehdi Hasan says that the Trump administration...
If that is true and it doesn't apply to citizens, why is it called the Mamdani Act?
Is arresting students for stating their opinions, even if they're radical left-wing opinions. He's not arresting American citizens. What the Secretary of State came out and said is that they are going to revoke or deny visas to people who have views that are contrary to the American national interest, which is not only entirely constitutional, that is just plain common sense. You don't want to bring in foreigners who have no right to be in your country who actively undermine your society. I mean, that's the most basic charge of immigration. Mm-hmm. So, and then to your point, you say, we're going to even deport some people. Well, to deport those people implies that they have no right to be here, that is, they're not American citizens. And in that case, yes, I favor deportations quite broadly. And the fact that it has that beautiful acronym is a cherry on top. I am calling, with very little knowledge beyond what you've just suggested about the act, I am calling on Congress today,
dude,
to pass it. To pass it twice.
Can I respond?
Freaking epic.
So, yeah, it's interesting that Michael again says, Mehdi Hasan thinks foreign students having their rights deprived. No, William Young, a veteran Reagan judge, said it was a full-throated assault on the First Amendment. He said, I'm going to answer the constitutional question posed here, which is, do legal immigrants have the same constitutional rights to free speech as citizens? Yes, they do, he said. These are his words. Yes, they do. There is no invidious distinction that Trump makes. His words, jurisprudence, history does not back that. In fact, go back to 1945, Bridges versus Wixon, famous Supreme Court case where they said, immigrants here in the country have the same First Amendment rights as everyone else. And these are not students who are, you know, trying to undermine America. Rumeysa Öztürk is a student from Turkey who wrote an op-ed in a newspaper saying, I think my university should divest from Israel. That's what she wrote. Said nothing about the United States of America. Said nothing violent. Masked men grabbed her off the street. Have you seen the video? It's one of the creepiest things you will ever see. A bunch of masked men with no IDs grabbed this young woman off the street and they imprisoned her. And Michael says, it's totally constitutional. Actually, the law that Rubio is citing, it's a 1952 law, obscure amendment. Do you know who said it was unconstitutional? A woman called Judge Marion Trump Barry. Donald Trump's late sister is the only judge to ever adjudicate on this. And she said, I think it's unconstitutional. Never reached the Supreme Court, but it's the only time an American judge has looked at it. And they think what Marco Rubio is doing, Trump's late sister thinks it's unconstitutional. A Reagan judge thinks it's an assault on the First Amendment. So let's not stop pretending this is about the left and about Muslims and about socialists. No, it's not. I've already pointed out, Mike Pence disagrees with you. Ben Shapiro disagrees with you. Reagan judges disagree with you. Trump judges disagree with you. The Supreme Court disagrees with you. Yeah. And I hope the audience tonight disagrees with you.
True.
Respond?
Yeah, maybe Mike Pence should have come here tonight. I don't know. Why am I... Just to clarify, like, I like Mike Pence as much as the next guy, but I'm not like...
By the way, they fucking hate Mike Pence, just so you know. They fucking hate him.
He's not my bosom buddy. I don't know. We don't sit up text. I don't know why Mehdi...
He was only the vice president for 4 years.
Mehdi keeps bringing
Donald Trump.
But anyway, I guess the question I would ask for Mehdi, and just as you offered me some advice,
please,
I'll ask you this. Do you think that foreign students who would apply for a student visa to the United States, do you think that they have some right to that visa?
No, I don't think they have the right to the visa. But I agree.
That's the question.
But I agree. That's not the question. No, it's not.
I'm claiming my time.
That's not the question. What a stupid fucking... What is his... He's a PhD. He's a smart guy. Whether or not you have the right to a thing is a different question than on what grounds can a thing be taken from you. I don't have a right to sit in a private business and eat food. The restaurant owner can kick me out if he wants. I don't have a right to that. But the restaurant owner can't come up to me and say, I'm kicking you out because you're a Cuban and I know you're a Cuban and I'm going to be racist against you or whatever. He doesn't have the right to do that. The right to the grounds on which you take something is different than whether or not the person has a right to the thing itself. I don't know why I'm explaining this. Stupid.
No, it's not. We're not in Congress. I'm answering the question. No, it's not a right to have a visa, but it is right to have free speech once you're in the country under the First Amendment, per Justice Murphy's ruling in Bridges versus Wicks in 1945. Once you're in the country, you have the same rights.
You're taking up all my time because you're filibustering. We're not.
As you did.
We're not talking about all times.
Get your time. Yeah, good.
You can start from the
I appreciate that. This is why, you know, just to loop back a little bit, this is why it's so funny that Mehdi Hasan takes issue with the arrest of Don Lemon, because Don Lemon was arrested claiming First Amendment rights. But you don't have a First Amendment right when you were actively violating the First Amendment rights of others, which is something that Mehdi is clearly very familiar with. And Mehdi has just admitted the point. And he keeps dishonestly trying to conflate legal immigrants in the United States with students who are here on visas from some foreign country. But he's already granted the premise, and he's granted the point, which is that.
Students here on visa from some foreign country, as opposed to students here on visa with domestic visas? Or what the fuck does that even mean? Okay.
The students...
Talk about filibuster.
...do not have a right,
yes, they
a
do.
Constitutional right...
Don't put words in my mouth. Yes, they do.
I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm telling the truth to the students. A foreign student who would like to study in the United States, at Dartmouth or elsewhere, has no right to do so. No natural right, no constitutional right, no legal right to that...
Oh, now we're talking natural rights.
Visa. That visa is a privilege granted to the United States. Mehdi and others might want to... blow open our borders and tell
others being the Supreme Court
that they're permitted to come here. You already granted the point, Mehdi, that a foreign student who wishes to come here does not have a right to that.
Once they have First Amendment rights, which you keep ignoring because the Supreme Court is against you, Michael, as it has been all night.
Thank you for your time. In the interest of time, we're going to move on to the next question.
Hello. I have a couple. Well, I have one main question, but I think that it lends to a lot of what this argument has been about, and I think a lot of where the argument has gone instead of maybe where it should have been. I've been really interested, and I'm curious to know, because, Mehdi, as you pointed out, there are some moments where the argument has moved as opposed to, does the president have the right? Is it constitutional that the president say, take Nigeria, for example, did he have the right to strike Nigeria? Instead, the question has become, is there a genocide in Nigeria? Should the president have, stricken Nigeria? I'm curious to know whether or not it is constitutional. If there is a matter, say, in Nigeria or elsewhere, where the president might personally view there to be some kind of situation. Do you believe that the president does have the right, or in some cases should, in your personal opinion, violate the Constitution? Do you believe that there are moments where the president has that right or should? And following that, what is the point of the Constitution if you believe that the president should or has the right to violate it?
Was that question for me or Mehdi?
For you, but okay. I would also...
Yeah, sure. Well, I suppose I just disagree with the premise, the suggestion that the president taking a military action around the world violates the Constitution. It does not. In the case of an intervention in Nigeria, one could make an argument that it pertains to American interests because we're the global empire and we have interests around the world. But one could also just make that it's a humanitarian intervention. And indeed, that was much of the argument that presidents have made for many decades now. Barack Obama made it. Bill Clinton made it. And furthermore, the Monroe Doctrine, which we were discussing earlier in the case of Venezuela, which has been the cornerstone of American foreign policy since the early 19th century, does not have a literal, direct constitutional predicate, and yet no serious person would suggest that it's somehow contrary to the Constitution.
Hold on, I'm sorry. I missed this. The Monroe Doctrine was basically saying that, like, no other countries are allowed to interfere in our hemisphere, right? That was essentially the Monroe Doctrine. What does Monroe Doctrine have to do with invading Venezuela and capturing Maduro? Was it cited for that, or what is the...
Constitution. So I think it would be contrary to the Constitution if the president went and toppled the regime in Nigeria and made it the 51st state, which I don't think any of us want to do, or if the military action went on for more than 60 or 90 days without authorization from Congress, as we saw in the cases of Barack Obama and Joe Biden. But a relatively minor military action for national interest or even for humanitarian reasons is well within the constitutional mainstream. There's nothing prohibiting the president from doing that, and indeed he has a right to do that as the commander-in-chief of the military. I guess one topic that we haven't really gotten gotten to, but it does sit at the foundation of a lot of the debate tonight, is what the executive really is. And so this gets back to Article 2, Section 1, which in the very first line explains what the executive is. And our framers said that the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. The courts have ruled on this many times. There are all sorts of interesting discussions about inspectors general and all other branches of government trying to involve themselves in the executive branch. But time and time and time again, we recognize that the executive has broad authority. And in our day and age, a lot of people are worried about an overreach from the executive. But I don't think that's really serious. First of all, Congress gave away a lot of its authority by establishing the agencies in the executive 100 years ago. But furthermore, if any branch is going to be overstepping, it's probably going to be the judiciary. So he has a constitutional predicate to do it. Again, we can disagree over the prudence of a strike on Nigeria, but that's not the topic on which you're voting tonight. The question is very basic. Is Trump within the constitutional mainstream? And the answer is yes.
That's not a question of if he's within the mainstream. Is he upholding the Constitution? Yes or no? And he's clearly not. What's interesting is Michael again made a weird concession there. He said he hasn't gone over 60 days in the case of Nigeria, but he has in Iran.
He has
in Iran. He crossed it last Friday.
But
I know I struggle with British English. Yeah. You maybe struggle with math.
No,
60 days was last Friday.
Got him.
We crossed it.
He got him.
Donald Trump wrote a letter saying hostilities are terminated.
Yep.
And then on Monday there was an exchange of fire between America and Iran, which is a reminder of what a liar and a fool he is. So no, he crossed 60 days. It's an illegal war. It was already illegal war. Now it's a doubly illegal war under the War Powers Act. I'm glad you raised the issue of executive power. I'm glad you raised the question of what is the Constitution for. I'm not a blind fan of everything in the Constitution. No one is. And we shouldn't be. There's amendment for a reason. Michael, you want to change the flag burning thing, right? You want an amendment to change it?
We don't need an amendment to change it.
You want to get rid of
1980? I wouldn't mind if there were a
clarification. Okay. And many of us on the left would like some reinterpretation of the Second Amendment.
Wait, he wants flag burning to be illegal?
I think that's fair to say. But the point is, you do it the right way. I'm not saying that I'm not a fan of the Second Amendment. Doesn't mean Joe Biden can come in and just strike down the Second Amendment. By the way, Donald Trump came in and said, you can't have guns, he said, after Alex Pretty was killed. Can you imagine what Michael would have said if Joe Biden had said, you can't have guns? By the way, notice that Republicans are always fine with executive power. When it's a Democrat in the White House, they're screaming from the hilltops about overreach.
Yep.
Ted Cruz called Barack Obama a tyrant. Mike Huckabee called him a dictator. Donald Trump said Biden was leading a Gestapo administration. They said Obama did too many executive orders. Biden governed by executive order. Well, Donald Trump has done 100 more executive orders in 18 months than Joe Biden did in 4 years. He's done almost as many executive orders in 18 months as Obama did in 8 years.
Yep.
So this nonsensical position that we're fine with executive power. No, you're not. You're fine with a Republican dictator. You just don't want Democrats to have any power.
True.
And I think you should be honest about that. People would have more respect for your views on the Constitution if you were consistent and not just a partisan.
True.
Well, it's interesting that Mehdi brings up President Trump's executive orders, because I seem to recall a journalist by the name of Mehdi Hassan, who in early 2021 was begging on television for Joe Biden to issue many, many more executive orders.
Yeah.
And I believe this Mr. Hassan was asking him to follow the legacy of Franklin Roosevelt, who issued thousands of executive orders, which were so relentlessly
And your side was attacking Biden for that. That's my point.
That you wanted more from him.
But Trump has exceeded Biden and Obama. And you were the guy
you want more. You're saying
you say judges overstepped.
But do you want more?
In 2022, when a Florida judge shot down the mask mandate, COVID mask mandate, Michael Knowles tweeted, since we're quoting each other, Michael Knowles tweeted in 2022, the hero judge struck down Biden's mask mandate. When you're a Republican judge who strikes down a Democrat's policy, you're a hero. When you're a Republican judge who strikes down a Republican president, and you have, I've named them all tonight, then it's judicial overreach.
Yep.
See the double standard?
Yeah, this is once again Michael's time defending the First Amendment yet again.
Epic.
Anyway, to the point I was saying, Mehdi was very, very upset that Joe Biden wasn't issuing more executive orders, and he said he has to follow FDR, who issued thousands, which were so relentlessly struck down by the Supreme Court as unconstitutional that FDR promised to totally reconstitute the court for the first time in 70 years, and only because a judge backed down was that averted. Nevertheless, you make a good point. Yes, Republicans and Democrats are different. Their policies are different. Some are good, some are bad. I want more of the good ones and fewer of the bad ones. But on the issue of executive authority here, there's really no question. You say, I'd like to amend the Constitution. I don't think we really need to. And on this point, on the unitary executive, on the fact that the executive power is vested in the President of the United States, that is clear as day from the Constitution, from now 250 years of jurisprudence, almost 250 years of jurisprudence,
Man,
and then all the way up to even the post-Watergate reforms, the Inspector General Act, which acknowledges that very fact, and to Supreme Court cases since then. So the executive does have a lot of authority. I don't like it when Democrats win it and affect it, which is why I think we need to win elections.
Hi, Michael Mehdi. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for coming up here.
Do you plan to finish reading / covering the SCOTUS ruling or reading? I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow, listen. Tomorrow, I'll have a full stream. I love you guys. Have fun. Be careful. Stay safe.